Federal cybersecurity officials are in knots over the Heartbleed threat. The vulnerability potentially affects a common data encryption system used on Internet servers. Homeland Security says federal web servers are okay. The National Security Council even weighed in. To help get some of the reality of Heartbleed, we turn to Alan Paller, Director of Research at the cybersecurity education firm SANS Institute. Alan, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Tom and Emily.
All right, so sort out the Heartbleed. Is this a realized or is it simply a potential threat?
It's realized. The Canadians have been hit. Others have been hit. It's much smaller than the target attack, so it's a major vulnerability, but it's not as big as some of the biggest attacks we've seen.
And what do we know so far about the federal government websites? We know that DHS has said probably public-facing websites are isolated from this, but what about all the federal government's infrastructure?
Great question. So most people see this as a website problem because that's what we focus on. But every server that is in the network, and think of all the database servers that have the actual information people are after that are behind the website, are potentially vulnerable. But it's helpful to understand what it is and what is vulnerable. So let's do it really quickly. OpenSSL is a free library that handles the encryption, especially the encryption when you're communicating over the web. A programmer a couple years ago wanted to add a really good feature. The feature was called a heartbeat feature where you could check to see if the browser was still there. The browser could check to see if the server was still there. Because otherwise you didn't know, if you weren't hearing something, you didn't know whether it was alive or not alive. So it was a good feature. In putting the feature in, he put a bug in. And the reason he put a bug in is that no one ever taught him to write secure code. So it would be like a doctor who didn't know about infections. So, was I supposed to wash my hands? Aha, nobody told me in school about washing my hands.
Kind of a classic problem.
Yeah, it is. And it is, in fact, the underlying problem for most of our flaws. But so they put that in. They had the vulnerability. And now anyone who communicates with that server can grab 64K of memory and use it because he left a flaw in his program. Turns out that's something that people have now automated. So there are now automated tools you can use to go look into both web servers, but any other server you can get into. And because of other flaws like SQL injection, you can also get into database servers, and those are vulnerable as well. So that's the OpenSSL problem. But you're not vulnerable if you're not using the version that has this heartbeat function in it, which is one version of OpenSSL. So the federal government that is not using that on their websites, if they have websites that aren't using it, could say we're not vulnerable. What they aren't saying to you is whether their database servers are vulnerable, and they aren't saying to you whether all the federal websites that aren't run in their IP space, meaning if they've contracted for the website, they're not saying at all whether those have been checked.
So that could be a cloud provider another contractor.
Exactly.
All right, so it's not just about passwords. I mean, we've heard it like, Emily changed all her passwords over the weekend. 3457926X65. But it's more than just a password situation then in terms of the possible data loss.
Yeah, the bigger worry that many people have is that in that memory, you can also pick up the encryption keys, which you can use to go backwards in time or forwards in time and decrypt other communications in and out of that server. So, and there was a proof that could be done over the weekend, a competition that proved it could be done. And even the people who did it were surprised at how easy it was. It's automated. You don't sit there and type things. You put it on. What's interesting about this vulnerability is it doesn't give you, the memory you want. It gives you 64K of random memory. So you just have to keep running it until you find the one that might have credit card numbers, data in it, or PII or encryption keys.
We're speaking with Alan Paller. He is Director of Research at the SANS Institute. So we know that this bug has been there since sometime in 2012, right? And yes, I did change my password, but I'm just wondering, is the damage already done? Because all these companies have issued fixes and they say that their sites are now secure. But what about that information leak that's been happening over 2 years? I suppose that can still come back to haunt people, right, if the bad guys are taking that information.
The main problem is if the encryption keys are gone. Because if the encryption keys are gone, they can pretend to be a website, so for phishing exercises. But I don't think this is one of those things where, oh my God, I have to change my password. This is something that will affect me. The actual impact on the general user base is not nearly as bad as it is if you were a target user and your credit card has been taken. So I don't, this isn't one for all of us to worry about or all of us to run around and change passwords. It is useful to change passwords. If you're going to change a password, don't do it unless the system is already fixed. Because if you change on a system that hasn't been fixed, then it's just as likely your new password will be picked up. And there is a site that I will give to Emily that you can check. You can check this, anybody you're using to see if they have been fixed. That doesn't mean they were ever infected. In fact, 99% of those people were never vulnerable. But at least they're okay to change your password.
So you could go to Symantec or one of the companies like that that sell encryption keys, and you could buy new ones and put them in and you'd be okay?
If you're the server people, what you do is you tell the people who say your key is okay, it's not okay, you put a new key in and you force people to check and not use the old key. What's interesting, Tom, is that's actually going to be a bigger problem than this vulnerability. If tens of thousands of sites change their keys, you can slow down the internet radically, and we don't have a good solution to that. And the bottom line here, though, is that this all happened because we're using reusable passwords. If we were using things like letting the site send us a password on our iPhone or on our mobile device or on our laptop,
pager,
anything, this problem wouldn't be a problem at all. So it's a laziness on our part.
Yeah, let's zoom out a little bit, because there's an emerging kind of regime where federal agencies and the corresponding companies in the private sector, energy to energy and so forth, water to water and Homeland Security to everybody else, where they get together in theory and share information about cyber threats free of the anti-competitive situations that could arise. Is this one of those situations where that should come into effect, where the Energy Department is talking to utilities, how are you doing? Or the Commerce Department talking to big retailers and saying, what are your servers like? What do we all know here? Is this a situation that would invoke that kind of planning that and information sharing that is emerging as the model?
This is probably the best example yet of information sharing. It also shows that the federal government had nothing to do with it. This is information sharing that happened without the federal government completely. Google knew about it in advance. They fixed it on their systems. They let the other large sites know about it so they could fix it. They let the world know about it in a nice cascading kind of smart sharing way. Made sure that the people who wrote the software fixed it so that you could get the update all quietly. They couldn't, the only problem was it's hard to keep everything quiet. So the bad guys found out about it, and maybe some of the good guys found out about it, but for the most part, handled better than any other vulnerability we've heard of.
Well, what does that teach the federal government when it talks about information sharing, presumably the Department of Homeland Security being at that heart of the hub?
I think the Homeland Security Department has learned its lesson. It used to be like the other agencies where they would say, send us the information and we will share it. What they learned, and the NCIC has done a wonderful job at this, what they learned is, first, the government has to give valued information that companies can act on. And if they do that for a consistent period of time, somewhere in the 6 to 12 months, and it's really actionable data, then the others will share. Otherwise, the federal government is just a molasses producer that causes people to be afraid to share information because they don't know what the feds are going to do with it.
Now, a few years ago, there was at U.S. CERT, I think the leader of U.S. CERT eventually had to leave because they missed a big virus that was going around. This wasn't Stuxnet, but one before that, and I forget the name of it. But is this a case where the government was flat-footed and didn't know about things, or does everyone look a little bit more agile and nimble this time around?
There's no reason why the government should know about things earlier than other people. Everybody's looking for vulnerabilities. This is another example where the private sector found something earlier. They might not have found it earlier than the intelligence community. We don't know when the intelligence community discovered this vulnerability. But to the extent that defenders in general learned about it, there was no reason why the feds should learn about it earlier.
So where do we go from here? I mean, I'm just curious because there are headlines today saying it's about to get worse for the public user because of Heartbleed. You've mentioned this great unknown, perhaps, about federal data servers or other contracted websites. Just want your prediction.
This one isn't one to worry about. The main problem, and we don't have a good answer to this one, is this concept that we might slow the internet down when we update the keys on tens of thousands of websites. So if you're checking the key, people might turn off checking the key because it was slowing them down, and then there's no protection against it. But this isn't one for people to worry about. There are really two main lessons we should get from this. One is that the colleges that continue to refuse to teach secure coding when they teach programming shouldn't get any more federal money until they change that practice, because they're actually putting out every day new programmers who are going to cause this problem. As long as they're doing it, we don't have any defense at all. And the other one is this idea of just using that password because it's convenient. It's almost as convenient to have them send you one on your mobile device or your laptop or your desktop, and that really is a wonderful way to feel better and to be able to allow them to take more time to fix the problem. Right now they have to fix it in a big hurry because everybody's using reusable passwords.
So this is a good case for getting the hurry on for the NSTIC, the Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace, which is talking about something in a world beyond passwords. It seems like this is a good call to arms for that effort to get a kickstart.
Yeah, for its sample projects to get more visibility so we can have proof of concept so we can get it implemented more broadly.
And in the meantime, it might be the world is undergoing maintenance, so we're slow today.
We are slow today, but it's a beautiful day in Washington.
All right, time to get off from behind your computer anyways. Alan Paller is Director of Research at the SANS Institute. Alan, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Emily.